understands your anger," he said. Big Angel rattled his footrests. "What we need to understand," Dave said, oblivious to this outburst, "is that death is not the end. Well, it's the end of this." He waved his hand toward the great fiesta, where many humans frolicked beneath the sun. "But I tell you truly, it is but a transition. It is but a portal. And believe it or not, on the other side, every second is 1,000 years, and every 1,000 years is a second, and it's all a fiesta. Better than this one." "Bullshit, Dave." "Maybe. Maybe not. Only one way to find out." Good old Dave took a happy sip of purloined coffee. Big Angel sighed, rubbed his face, thought about how much he'd miss rubbing his face. Everything was precious to him suddenly. Sighing. What a wonderful thing it was to sigh. Geraniums. Why did he have to leave geraniums behind? Dave beamed at him. Were his teeth whitened? Big Angel wanted to get his own teeth whitened, except he was going to die right after the party. "I have 4 children with my flaca," he said. "Yes, one is dead. Another is dead to me. El Indio. What kind of name is that? They are my children, but they are. And Minnie and Lalo are here. They are mine." "Yes. They all had children, except El Indio." "Right. Their children are having children." "Gotcha. Why must I leave them?" "Believe," Dave said. Did Pinche Dave never waver? "Pinche Dave," he decided to say, "do you never waver?" "Of course I do. Of course. Even Ignatius Loyola wavered. That dark night of the soul, man. No one's immune. It would all be meaningless if you didn't wonder and doubt. That's what makes it real. That's what makes us people. God could have sent angels to flutter around like fairies, delivering run punch and manna all day on a cosmic cruise ship. But what would that avail us?" Big Angel made that monkey face and shook his head. "Not fair." "You're being dramatic." Dave leaned toward him and murmured, so only he heard it, "Biatch." Big Angel coughed out a small bark of laughter. "I hate you so much," he said. Dave crossed his arms. "Miguel Angel," he said. "It isn't hard to die. Everybody does it. Even flies do it. Everyone here is doing it. We're all terminal." He had a tear in his eye. Big Angel could see it brimming. "Your schedule is just different from mine. Dying is like catching a train to Chicago. There are 1,000,000 rails, and the trains run all night. Some go scenic, and some go express, but it's a big old train yard. It's easy. What takes balls is to die well. What takes balls is to believe." "Big steel balls," said Big Angel. "Big clanky balls." "Unos huevotes," Angel cried. "Grandotes," Dave agreed. Perla appeared. She sat down beside her flaco. She tapped the table with her finger. "Balls," she said in Spanish. "Huevos? Steel balls?" "No, mijo. Sorry, Dave. It takes big ovaries." She nodded at them both and waved her finger. "This life, this dying, big, clanky steel ovaries, cabrones." She clutched her belly and shook her little paunch. "Ovarios de oro." Big Angel raised his eyebrows at Dave. "Amen," Dave said. "Blade Runner. More time. More time. More." If the spirits of Papa Antonio and Mama America were flying over the neighborhood now, looking down on their children and their children's children, they would see Lalo and Giovanni in another house off a dirt alley, sprawling in a sketchy garage with little paper envelopes unfolded before their noses and their feet splayed on a filthy carpet, Gio reaching back and slipping a small pistol out of his belt to hand to his father, who trembled and shook his head as he hit envelope after envelope, and a cholo, with teardrops tattooed on his cheeks and other face tattoos of the number 13, coming into the room with a couple of icy 40s. Big Angel wanting to go inside for a rest, but Minnie stopping him and wheeling him against his will back toward the lawn, where the dancers were filtering to the tables, saying, "Just you wait." Tio Jimbo, asleep, half lying across his table, and Lupita stroking his head. Perla, weeping silently in a corner, with two chiwinis in her lap. A knot of vatos y rucas gathered in the driveway, passing smokes around and talking shit. El Pato craning around to find La Gloriosa. And La Gloriosa, refreshed and remade up, in charge of getting Lalo's garage door open for Minnie's surprise, laughing and flirting and swirling her skirt and swaying her magnificent hair as if her heart weren't charred within her. Pazuzu hunting for Leo. Marilu sitting stiffly watching Paz and wishing she could leave. Little Angel sitting with Uki and Uki muttering, "Third stone from the sun." The Biff Buffy collegiates actually leaving. The African-American nephew learning Spanish from seven giggling young ladies. The Cookie Monster bent in earnest conversation with his mysterious third cousin. A chicken coming from some unknown realm, strutting among the chairs, eating potato chips and pieces of hot dog bun. Neighbors peeking over fences. A white Audi cruising by slowly in the street. And a yellow school bus coming to a stop before the house, the door opening, and the vatos and rucas beginning to shout and whistle. 3:56 p.m. There is a minute in the day, a minute for everyone, though most everyone is too distracted to notice its arrival. A minute of gifts coming from the world like birthday presents. A minute given to every day that seems to create a golden bubble available to everyone. But Big Angel could have missed it because he was sore and angry that he couldn't go to bed. Jimbo did miss it because he had passed out. People on the freeway 5 miles from the party missed it because they were battling traffic and hating the Mexicans because talk radio told them it was all right because of ISIS and the border wall and the Chargers had betrayed San Diego and evangelicals were howling that sodomy was the new law of the land and their favorite talk show hosts were unable to control any narrative anymore and the drought was going to continue until all of California burned and vanished in dust and the rivers in the west had turned yellow or huge floods were on the way and nobody knew what to expect. But Minnie knew all about the minute, though she could not have explained it to anyone. It had come to her on one of those long, lonesome nights. Who knew that a night of bad sleep and discomfort and sad jams on Pandora was a gift? But it was. She found the golden bubble in her own misery. "Wait, Daddy," she said, bracing herself against the wheelchair so her pops wouldn't steam away like a grumpy locomotive. "Minnie," he said, "I'm tired." "I know. Hold on." "You know," he snapped. "Nobody knows how I feel." "Yes, Daddy." Perla fretted. "Mija," she said, "let him go, see?" "Mami, no," Minnie said. "Just watch." It had cost her a large chunk of her savings. She started laughing when she heard the tumult from the front of the house. "Listen!" A massive bleat. A fanfare. "What is that?" Big Angel said. Little Angel stood up and put a hand over his eyes. "Happy birthday, Daddy," Minnie said with perfect timing, because she had come into her power and everything she would touch now would be blessed with perfection. She just knew it. So as she said it, the trumpets sounded. "Gah!" Big Angel cried. The mariachis marched through the garage and burst out in a line, playing impossibly loud, joyous music, all in magnificent black and silver, crimson cummerbunds, vast sombreros, white frilly shirts with red ties, elaborately fluttering, trumpets, violins, guitarrón, guitar. They formed a half circle before Big Angel and Perla and rocked the universe. Big Angel laughed and clapped his hands and laughed and kicked his feet and cried. He sang and sang and sang. When they were finished, the mariachis accepted their worship like true stars and tipped their giant hats to Big Angel and trooped back out to their bus and charged into the afternoon. Big Angel was still wiping his eyes when he kissed Minnie 5 times. At the end of the day, all he really knew was that he was a Mexican father, and Mexican fathers made speeches. He wanted to leave her with a blessing, with beautiful words to sum up a life, but there were no words sufficient to this day. But still, he tried. "All we do, mija," he said, "is love. Love is the answer. Nothing stops it, not borders, not death." He held her hand in his burning fingers, only pulling away when a shaken Perla wheeled him back to his bedroom. 4:30 p.m. Minnie turned back and watched her clan. They seemed to be moving slower and slower as she watched. Marilu, her kids were all clean, smart, educated. Pato, his boys were sweet, even Marco, the metal beast. Tia Gloriosa, the strongest woman she had ever met, except for Mommy. The little shorties raising hell, the old ladies and men in brown suits. God, they were beautiful. A strange stillness fell over the fiesta. People sat quietly, talking among themselves or just thinking. The hilarity was absorbed by the music, it seemed. The density of the day came upon them all. People were murmuring their personal testimonials at every table, suddenly remembering past moments with the man, mourning the moment that was surely on its way, sooner than later. Everybody saw it. Everybody knew it. Minnie was undone. She rushed inside and locked herself in the guest bathroom and sobbed. Lupita and La Gloriosa moved languidly, policing the tables. The neighborhood ladies fussed in the kitchen and kept the empty crates and platters moving. People snuck out of the yard in odd little mincing escapes as if their tiptoeing would make them invisible. Somehow ribs and barbecued chicken appeared, but nobody could eat any more. Pato decided, however, to give it a try. Ookie sat far away from everybody else. He held the pilgrim chicken in his lap, petting it like a puppy. It jerked its head around, watching the people, making small clucks and groans, then put its head on Ookie's shoulder. It didn't make a fuss when Little Angel walked up to them. "Hi, Ookie," he said. "Hi. Are you okay?" "Ookie's okay. Did you like the music?" "A man hit Ookie," Ookie said. "I know. I'm sorry. Ookie stole Legos." "Why do you steal Legos, Ookie?" Ookie petted his chicken. He smiled slyly. He looked up at Little Angel. "That's the secret." Little Angel reached out a finger and scratched the chicken's neck. "Ookie and Big Angel has a secret."
"Oh?
You're Little Angel."
"That's right."
"When Big Angel dies, will you be Big Angel?"
Little Angel blinked that one away. "I guess I'll be the only angel," he said.
Ookie put the chicken down. He got up and took Little Angel's hand. The smaller man's grip was as dry and hard as wood. He pulled Little Angel to the shed behind the house. He fumbled under his collar and pulled out a key on a length of string and used it to unlock a padlock on the door hasp. It's a secret, he said again, putting his finger over his lips and pulling the door open. He reached in and yanked a chain, and a single bulb snapped on. It swung on its cable, and shadows jerked back and forth. Little Angel could see what was inside.
Ookie made this, Ookie said.
What is it?
Look, you've got to be kidding, Little Angel said.
Across town, Lalo and Gio are in a panic. The candy-colored Chevy Impala burns off the blacktop and slides into another alley, this one dirt. The engine has the voice of 50 angry cats. Curlicues of saffron dust swirl in the car's wake.
No, 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 so bad, so bad, so bad, Lalo is shouting. He's crying. What do we do? He groans.
Crows fall upon them, like hordes of wasps.
Pops, Gio says, we didn't do nothing.
Plastered to the passenger window, Lalo is deeply into his rush. The pills and weird powder he drank in a cup of tequila have kicked in hard, and coruscating colors run down his arms and shoot out of his pants. He thinks he rolled down the window a minute ago and vomited, but the window's closed now. And Lalo remembers. They had pulled into the alley, and he'd said, where's his boys at? And Gio saying, is that stupid Ruffles and his cuz? I paid them 15 to go to Subway. And Lalo, feeling guilty that his son had grown up simmering with rage and plotting wicked paybacks while Lalo kept trying to forget. Now he looks at his hands. Are they red? Is that blood? His hands? Is that mud from Iraq on them? Can he smell rotting flesh? The dragon writhes on his leg. He watches in horror as it climbs up into his shorts and lets its tail slip out, blood dripping from it. Oh, my God. Blood flew around, Lalo says.
No, Pops, chill. I busted a full clip in that dude.
Chill, goddammit. His son standing over that vato like he was just saying, hey. The gangster smug on his Salvation Army couch in that garage, b-ball, cat-ball cranked sideways on his fool head, Black Widow spiders inked on his neck, a 13 along each side of his jaw, and those two blue teardrops in the corner of his left eye. Lalo, staring at those teardrops, realizing they stood for Braulio and Guillermo, his mind blinking like a neon sign. You fuck, you fuck, you fuck! The gangster laying out the drugs on his shipping crate coffee table.
Is what you came for. Best be ready to pay.
And Lalo remembers arcs of blood, like weird shiny pebbles that melted when they hit the walls, the slippery floor all greasy with blood.
Blood everywhere, Gio. The radios were all static. They couldn't get to us.
That was a war, Pops, right?
But that dude just now,
no, Pops. Gio slams around a corner. Cops could be anywhere.
You killed my bro, Lalo says. I said to his face, right?
Bam, bam.
You.
He remembers noises from the gangster's lungs whistling through his ribs.
No, that was PFC Gomez from East L.A. They were holding a sheet of plastic over the gaping wound in his chest and pushing down till his ribs cracked.
No way to get a helicopter in that alley. Dogs. Women shrieking, Hajis on the rooftops all around.
Gio, he cries, what did we do?
Pops, knock it off. Gio is wrestling the wheel, keeping his eye on the mirror in case that culero and his homies are in pursuit.
Gio!
Lalo gawks at Gio's eyes. They're bugging out. His eyes are out of his head, on long pink stalks, waving like a lobster's. He remembers the gangster's eyes. He had eyes tattooed on his eyelids. Every time he blinked, he was still staring. Lalo didn't know what he was seeing and hypnotized him. It was the eyes. The eyes pushed him into his rush. The car's window glass is soft and gooey against his face.
Well, ain't that some shit right there?
Oh, Jesus, he moaned. We killed that dude.
Shit, no. You choked.
The car slides.
Mijo?
I thought you were a badass, Gio says. Oh, my God, this boy is so cold. A dog. They hit a dog. No, they didn't. Lalo watches it escape. Killing a dog. That would be the end. That would be the last frickin' straw. Payback, Gio says. All you had to do. His voice is suddenly melting and dripping. That whole room was melting and dripping. He watched the gangster's skull rise through his flesh like something surfacing in a swamp, and he stood, and his head kept rising and rising until it was out through the roof above the barrio, in the sky, and Lalo's in the car looking at his own fingers. He notices how long they are. So wavy. He holds his hand before his face. It's a squid. Where's my gun? He asks Gio, and his long fingers claw at his empty ankle holster. You threw it. Lalo flashes. They are both standing above that killer. Just another cartoon character in a Pendleton jacket, selling poison to little boys looking to be the baddest of the bad. And Gio, sliding the slender gun into Lalo's hand and nudging him with his shoulder. And the man, knowing his moment had come without seeing the gun, obviously wondering why he didn't have his own gun, dropping the baggies of dope and pills on the table. The cups from the weird Amazon poisons Lalo had drunk starting to crawl around on the table beside the drugs, the man's dead eyes going deep with fear for an instant and hard again. Yeah, he said. This is it, huh? Chin held high. You killed my bro. Yes, Lalo remembers. Gio, he says. I didn't drop no gun. You tossed that shit before we booked out of there. Please, Lalo pleads with the universe. You give some whack lecture, then ran, pops. No. Yeah, you did. The words are stretching like rubber bands and snapping back in Lalo's face. Please, please, God, if you have any mercy for me, let me wake up. I didn't even guess you were gonna puss out. And Gio laughs in derision. Oh, my God, Lalo shouts. You're my baby boy, though. Lalo can't tell if his tweak is stretching all the sounds like it's stretching the car now. The car is suddenly rubber. It bends around corners and stretches so his lobster-faced boy moves far ahead of him, then snaps back. You never killed nobody, Lalo says. You play act, little man. I killed people for reals. It was my job. I got blood all over me forever. Help me. Got his stash, didn't we? Gio says. Taught his ass to kill my tío that way, at least. What you worried about? Lalo kicks the mochila at his feet. It's full of weed and ice crystals and cash and chains. Help, he says again. Giovanni looks at him and says quite calmly, something Lalo cannot understand and never will. And still Lalo tries to answer, but his words make no sense, and spit is cascading from his mouth. We good, pops. All love. Proud of you anyway. Lalo cranks his molten head and stares out the window. Bad, he says. So bad, son. Or he hopes he managed to say this. I forgive you, pops. You just ain't that strong. Echoes. Weird bird noises. The meaty sound of punctures and the blood spurts and grunts when the rounds hit, burning the meat of the victims. But it's Iraq, not California. Check. Keeping it straight. Then Lalo sees a black and white. Pigs! He screeches. Stay cool, Gio says. The cop car turns into 169 cars. Lalo closes his eyes. When he looks again, it's a VW painted like a cop car. Geek squad. He can put that much together. He starts to cry again. I'm scared, he says. Gio reaches over and clutches his knee. Pops. Pops! Listen. Are you listening? He lets go to downshift. Lalo stares at him. Snap out of it! Instantly, Lalo remembers the cool pistol in his hand, seeming as ridiculous as a toy and at the same time apocalyptic. The drug writhing up his veins like some skinny black serpent.
The man staring at him with no expression, but with hands shaking. His son saying, "Do it, cap his ass." And the pistol just floating in the air, looking to him like some weird airborne tropical fish. And the tattoo. Oh, God, it's the tattoo on his own arm. He's scratching at it now. Big Angel, that dumb smile, that hair pops forever. "What did my brother do to you?" "Nothing. He got green-lighted and I did what I was told. Just doing business." All time stops for Lalo. Pops forever. And Lalo has been a hostage all his life. Trying so hard to be Braulio. Trying so hard to be Pops. Not able to be either one. Ashamed of his father. What a silly old man. Afraid of his brother. So much more macho than he'd ever be. And all this time, trying to convince people he was just like this piece of shit sitting before him. He extends the pistol again. The man falls back and closes his eyes, and all Lalo can feel is sorrow. Lalo feels so sorry for the world, for everything in it, all of them dying and turning to dust. He feels the drugs, feels the rush, he feels a wind, and remembers how his hair would lift when he was playing baseball, how the sun felt, and how Pops cheered for him in embarrassing polyester bell bottoms with mustard all over his stupid mustache. And Lalo hears his own voice again, sounding alien, as if it were his father's voice, saying, "We got to stop. We just running in circles. Payback, payback, payback. You ain't never gonna pay nothing back." The pistol drops to his side. The man on the couch opens his eyes, sees the gun has dropped away from his face, and suddenly deflates with disbelief. He is revealed, a middle-aged loser who has disfigured his own face and is not a threat to anyone in the world, not even worth shooting. "This ain't what we are, Holmes," Lalo says. "This is not us. This is the story they tell about us. But it's not true." He jerks the pistol back up. The man flinches, and that flinch is the worst moment of all for him. "This is us." Aiming above the man's head, Lalo pulls the trigger, emptying the clip into the wall. The man falls back, clutching his chest and kicking his legs in the air, shouting in terror. Each round sounds flat and hard as Lalo fires, the smoke choking and blue, plaster showering down on them until the gun clicks, empty, and he whips it across the room as the man ducks and weeps. Then Gio is grabbing him, and they're running. "Jesus Christ, Pops, what was that?" Lalo feels the world burning all around him. And he snaps back into the immediate moment and finds himself staring at Gio's hands on the wheel. The wheel looks like it's made out of soft licorice. "I'm going to hell, Gio. Signed, sealed, and delivered. I'm serious." Lalo sees his grandfather's ghost climbing in through the windshield before he passes out. Ookie's surprise. How could they know what Little Angel's home had been like? He looked out the door at all of them. The incessant music thrummed in his ears. He almost couldn't hear what Ookie was muttering. Christmas. Sure. They were jealous of Christmas. And the rents had knocked themselves out for him. He had to admit it. They had gone without to make sure he had his James Bond super pistol, his man from Uncle's spy briefcase, his slot card track, his thing maker, his electric train. The best, of course, the baddest gift any boy could get was a sparkling metal flake blue Schwinn Stingray bike. They all saw that bike and thought, "Rich gringo pampered while father left us to starve." What they didn't see was Don Antonio's tutorial for the soft little white boy.
the fine art of learning to ride a bike. Como un hombre.
Little Angel had never seen the Harley. He had no idea that his father rode such a thing. Even when they went to the Two View Drive-In and watched Adam Rourke biker movies, his father never told him. Don Antonio saw the bicycle as a way to toughen the boy. Everything was a tool toward making him a man. The belt had worked on Don Antonio's other boys, and it worked on Gabriel. The white boy's fear of the bike, of falling, of pain, for God's sake, shamed Don Antonio. He was damned if it would have training wheels. He balanced Gabriel on it and ran down the main street, holding him until he was going fast, then let go and watched the panicked wobbling until he crashed and lay on the curb, crying. Don Antonio walked to the kid and put out his hand. It was just like the beach. Angel Gabriel thought his father was saving him, but Don Antonio took his hand to get him back up and force him onto the bike in spite of his begging and crying, and they ran and crashed, and again, torn pants at the knees, blood from his left knee and his nose, and he kept crashing until he could ride. There was no choice, so there was no problem. After Little Angel's mother threw his father out, Don Antonio went to live with Big Angel. Little Angel was already away at college. Then his mother died unexpectedly in her sleep. She had a picture of Little Angel in bed with her and a junior league cookbook. It was a simple thing, really, scattering her ashes in the ocean. Just Little Angel and his mother's friends from work, grocery checkers from Vaughn's supermarket. There were no relatives, after all. Though Pato, loyal as ever, showed up at the boat dock and somberly climbed aboard. Little Angel wore her name tag pinned to his shirt. The company that ferried them out into the ocean provided them with roses and a glass of champagne each. San Diego in the distance looked parched and crumbling to him. Dolphins appeared around the boat, and the grocery ladies took this as a sign. His mother caught a ray of sunlight as she spread out under the water, and for just an instant, she gleamed and sparkled like glitter. 5 p.m. I was so bored before you came over to say hello, she said. Our family is afraid of anybody who's different. The Cookie Monster's hair had fallen. He rested his chin on his fist at the table and stared at her pale face. Her name was Liliana. I'm different too, he said. She patted him like a good doggie. Of course you are. Dude, you can call me Lily, she said. For sure. Lily, how frickin' awesome was that? She was his third cousin on his dad's side, daughter of a dentist in Mazatlan. Safe enough for kissing cousins, like Lalo said, studying at UCSD, blind since birth, his exact age. She had been to Paris. She had confused him by saying it was beautiful. How did she know? Did it smell beautiful? Probably not. His dad had been to Paris and said it smelled like pee. I can't wait to hear your band, she said. Well, he boasted, it's pretty dark. I love dark music, she said. I have a new stage name for you, Nice and Dark. He had thought about stage names before. She got closer to perfect every second. Hit me, he said. Neil Young. Neil Young? No, silly. Neil, right? Young? Carl Jung? Never mind. It's college humor. Ow. Are you fat? She said. Yeah, totally fat, he said. She laughed. Say it in your devil voice. Oh, man. For me, Carlo, shred it. Shred the fatness. Marco, people are listening. Exactly. Isn't that the point? She patted the table with her palm. Sacrifice yourself for me. I am fat!
the extreme demon roared. They fell across the table, giggling like four-year-old twins sharing a bubble bath. Several people craned around to stare at them. Marco waved. He was very happy. "Are people looking?" she said. "Everybody's looking. Kiss me quick." She scrabbled her fingers across the table and found his hand. "While they're watching." He gave her a peck. "Ravishing," she said, and squeezed his fingers. "So I had this dream last night," she said. Listen, this is crazy. I hate it when people tell me their dreams, but this one is really weird. I was in this field. It was a summer day, okay? Like, all sunny, birds singing, just a perfect day. And the fields were all golden, and the sky was blue, and there were big green trees, little pretty puffy white clouds. I know what you're thinking. Like, how do I see it, right? I don't know how. I just see it in my dreams. Anyway, but then this thing happened. There were people in the sky, people hanging above the field on cables, like ornaments. Surreal. The rapture, he suggested. Hardly, you asswipe, she replied. Screw you. You wish. He stared at her face. It was animated, full of joy. Yeah, she made expressions that seemed otherworldly, but he understood. She had never seen another face to know what tics were normal. Her lips were pink and shiny, and he was dying to see her eyes, even if they couldn't see him. "How did I see those things, Carlo?" she asked. "Marco, I don't know." He bent down and smelled her hand. "Stop sniffing me, you freak," she said, but she didn't take her hand away. He kissed her knuckles. "Oh, my," she said. "I can't," he said, "explain it." "Me neither. But I would give anything to be inside your head for a minute," she said. "I would give anything to see if what I saw was real or not."
"Like if what you think is blue is really red.
Or some color you never saw.
Or not a color at all."
"Blue, boy, blue. It's the color of wind blowing through flowers, right?"
He kissed her hand again. "Absolutely."
"You're crazy about me, yes?" she said.
"For real."
He stood. As they left the party, they were holding hands and still laughing. They swiped Pato's car and didn't come back. At first, Little Angel was unsure about what he beheld, but the magnitude of it slowly came to him. Perhaps it was the colors that threw him, for Ookie had built this with no regard for matching hues. It was all a rainbow.
"Ookie made it," Ookie said.
Little Angel stood there holding his hand, breathing. "How long did it take, Ookie?"
"Couple years, yeah, couple."
Forms made of plastic rainbows. There was a work table in the shed, beyond it an open space that would have held rakes and wheelbarrows, even a car. But Big Angel and Ookie had cleared all that out when Big Angel could still walk. Big Angel had cut out pictures from newspapers and magazines, and they had tacked up a street map on one wall.
"Are you experienced?" Ookie said.
There were sheaves of notes and drawings stacked up on the table, loose sheets all penciled in and colored with crayons.
"Ookie's blueprint," Ookie said.
It was huge. The expanse of the Coronado Bridge swooped away to the right. Around its nearer base, Ookie had meticulously built a model of San Diego. He had made Lego skyscrapers, hotels, even the Embarcadero, with a model of the Star of India docked at the pier. Little streets and avenues, some of it sketchy, blocks barely begun, some of it insanely detailed. Broadway was alive before him. The old Woolworths building was exactly as he remembered it. And down the blank riverbed that was the I-5 highway, there stood a small wire model of the Eiffel Tower. Little Angel was befuddled for a moment until he saw Ookie had affixed paper letters to it. KSON. He laughed. Yeah, it was the country music station's broadcast tower, south of the big bridge, and it all came rushing back to him. He, too, had thought when he was a child that it was the Eiffel Tower. Ookie, he said. Yeah. Ookie laughed and clapped his hands. Ookie, he said. Purple haze. Against the left wall was a model of this neighborhood, Lomas Doradas. Ookie scuttled over there. He pointed. Big Angel's house. Little Angel nodded. Ookie's house, pointing to the next block. They sat on the floor and stared at the plastic city. Ookie pointed out his best towers. That's the El Cortez Hotel, he said. That's the gas lamp quarter. Ookie's favorite. The new Horton Plaza shopping mall was not part of Ookie's city. It was the old Horton Plaza, with a fountain and little benches and plastic palm trees. It had been gone for decades, but Little Angel saw that it was better than the fancy stores there now, with its string of tumble-down movie theaters and its sailors and bums, buses on the sides, little cars lined up on Broadway. Ookie steals Hot Wheels, Ookie confessed. They laughed. Ookie needs buses. Matchbox, Little Angel said. Buses? I think so. Trucks, cabs, everything. I'll look it up. They shopped for Matchbox buses for a few minutes on his iPhone. Look, Ookie, delivery trucks, fire trucks, a mail truck. Buy. Hey, a VW hippie van. Buy all for Ookie. They high-fived when they found little groupings of pigeons made to scale for model train setups. Cops. Businessmen in 1950s hats. Little Angel ordered and ordered and entered Big Angel's address. He had no idea how long he sat in that room with Ookie. It was one of the best days he'd ever had, though. He hugged Ookie, but Ookie shoved him away. Airplanes, he cried, holding up a little metal 747. They rigged it up on a wire and hung it from a crossbeam to look like it was coming in for a landing. Look, Ookie said, and held up a little Dodge Charger. Crosstown traffic, he said. He handed it to Little Angel and nodded at his city. Go on. Really? Yeah, yeah, put. Angel got up on his knees and placed the car on 7th. Ookie squinted and shook his head. Angel moved it to Broadway, close to the water and the almost completed Union Station. Ookie nodded. My brother helped you do this, he said. Big Angel, yeah. He told me the secret. What secret? It's a secret. What secret, Ookie? Ookie tapped his noggin. Ookie, he said, is a genius. You should always listen to Big Angel. He's always right. Excuse me while I kiss the sky. They held hands and studied paradise in reverent silence. Today. The Confessions. Ookie left the padlock unlatched so Little Angel could go back and look at it again later. Little Angel was in a hurry to tell his big brother he had seen the secret city. What he'd seen was more astounding than that. He'd seen his brother for the first time. His brother, knowing his life was running out, had locked himself in a garage with a crazy boy to help him realize a dream no one would ever see. If there had ever been any doubt, Little Angel was now firmly in line with the Big Angel worshippers. Fully aboard. Big Angel. Bodhisattva. It was dark. Little Angel paused at his sister's table. Marilu was sadly drinking a glass of red wine. She was lit semi-romantically by a burning anti-mosquito torch. She was sighing. She couldn't understand why these party people didn't stop to think for a minute. She didn't know why they had all forgotten about her mother and forgotten why they were there now. Everybody was dying, and nobody cared.
"Where's the patriarch?" he asked. She put her hands together beside her cheek and closed her eyes, doing a variation of the family monkey face. This apparently also represented napping.
"Where else?" she said. "My poor brother." He moved on. He'd sit in the room until Big Angel woke up. It was about time to say goodnight. He imagined his nice, quiet hotel room. He felt like a weakling, but enough was enough. He could not imagine how his family could carry on in all this activity. They exhausted him. For a moment, he imagined La Gloriosa asleep beside him, her head on his chest, her hair across his face. The thought that this circus went on day after day stunned him. When he was a kid, alone with Dad and Mom, he had wished there was this kind of family tumult in his house, but no. In Seattle, he had a quiet white and blue condo looking out to Vashon Island. He watched the Bainbridge ferries cut across Puget Sound. He put out bread on his porch railing for the gulls and the crows. He once saw a fox pop out of the woods beside his complex and mince onto the beach. Barring Seahawks games, his life was quiet. He didn't even really like his girlfriend staying over. He noticed Paz glaring around at the partiers. Berlant was slumped a bit, crushed by sorrow she knew she could not bear. She was going to die right after her man, she was sure of it, though she would end up living on for many lonely years, guiding the family, but seldom cooking. A glass of bubbly tipped in her hand. Beside her, two old ladies played cards. He hugged her and kissed the top of her head. La Mini stood with her arms crossed, looking at nothing. He went and put his arm around her. "You did good," he said.
"Think so, tío."
Poor El Tigre had had to go to work. No boyfriend for her. She was flying solo.
"You like the mariachis?"
"Genius." She smiled at the ground.
"Where's Lalo at?" she said.
"Left with his son. Said something about a dude and a thing."
"That can't be good."
They watched Pazuzu stick her finger in Marilu's face and lecture her.
"Gotta go," Sheriff Minnie said, hurrying to them.
Little Angel wondered where Pato was until he discovered him in the living room, asleep on the couch. Down the hall and into Big Angel's room. There he was, the Mexican Buddha, in his blue pajama bottoms and gym socks. He was wearing a white undershirt, not asleep after all. Dave the American Coffee Bandit sat on the end of the bed. He rose.
"Gabe," he said. "Hi."
He held out his hand.
"Dave, right?" They shook. "They call me Little Angel."
"So I hear. I just found out about you."
They looked reproachfully at Big Angel. "I'm their best-kept secret, Dave."
"Not fair," said Big Angel. "We have a life, you know."
"Me too," said Little Angel, a little alarmed that this moment had already gone a tad sour. Dave watched the brothers. He said, "Maybe you're their precious jewel." Big Angel's voice cracked.
"Good one, Dave."
He studied the two of them standing there, his focus intense, sucking every second of life out of the air.
"I'm not even tired," he told his dead mother.
"Look," said Big Angel. He had a small stack of books by his foot.
"Dave thinks I can read these."
Dave ignored him. "We're just hearing confession here," he said to Little Angel.
"Confession," said Little Angel.
"Get the speed read," Big Angel said.
Little Angel picked up the books, Thomas Merton, The Seven-Story Mountain, Brennan Manning, The Ragamuffin Gospel and Ruthless Trust, Frederick Buechner, The Sacred Journey.
"Light reading," he said.
"If we had more time," Dave said, tipping his head at Big Angel, "I'd have given him some Buddhist texts, too."
"Dave wants me to learn to trust," Big Angel said, It's late, I admit, said Dave, but a worthy pursuit even at the last minute.
Trust what? Said Little Angel.
Dave sat back down and smiled at Big Angel.
God, said Big Angel.
Partly, said Dave.
Cancer, said Little Angel just a tad sharply.
Dave said, you should bequeath these books to your little brother.
Clock ticked.
Right, Big Angel said. He looked at Little Angel. I told this cabrón, I don't have time to read these. All my life is just three words, over and over. Today, I die.
You're being morbid, carnal.
That's what I've been telling him, said Dave.
Big Angel's left hand was starting to shudder. He hid it under his butt. La Gloriosa came into the room with a glass of murky orange-brown fluid.
I brought agua de tamarindo for you, she said, and she put the glass on Big Angel's bedside table.
My favorite, he said. She patted his head.
Not cold, he said.
No.
Cold feels like I swallowed a knife, he said.
I know.
Since chemo.
See, take your pills.
Hurts my teeth, hurts everything.
Sí, amorcito, she said.
Hello, father, she said to Dave as she went back out.
Dave raised his hand and blessed the air behind her.
Father, said Little Angel.
He's my priest,
Big Angel explained.
Indeed, said Dave. Father David Martin, S.J.
Es un jesuita, Big Angel said. Going to do my funeral.
Oh, shit, said Little Angel.
Sorry, Padre.
No worries.
Jesuits say it too. Every Jesuit in the world said, oh shit, when Francis was made Pope. He nodded at the prone patriarch.
We are deciding when to do last rites.
Are you dying tonight?
Little Angel said.
I am, his brother replied.
Dave shook his head.
I think he has more time.
He's pretty sick.
I'm right here, pendejos. Don't talk about me like I'm not here.
Little Angel dropped the books and sat on the end of the bed, too.
God, he said, this is all too much for me.
Carnal, I'll have cake first.
Don't worry, we got time.
Shut up.
Maybe dance, too.
Not funny.
You don't need to tell me what's funny.
Brothers,
you have some business to attend to, Dave said. He raised his hand over them and made the sign of the cross in the air. I do this a lot, he noted.
Does it work? Said Little Angel.
Got you here.
Boom, said Big Angel. Owned.
Lalo teach you that?
I'm an OG,
Big Angel said smugly.
Dave clapped his hands once and said, okay, call me Miguel, or have Perla call me, you know, and I'll call you Gabe, he said.
Your brother gave me your number. You'll help me at the funeral.
Wait, Little Angel said.
He was going to say, I'm leaving. But he stopped.
Thanks, guys, Dave said.
He waved at them and strode from the room, maintaining a splendid pace through the house and front yard until he was far down the street and climbing into his SUV and whistling.
Random selecting thoughts, Big Angel announced, I never took drugs.
No, Little Angel replied.
Me neither.
Not even marijuana.
Same.
I thought you were a hippie.
I'm going to start smoking marijuana, Angel said. Eat it in cookies. What do you think about that?
Why not? They say it helps.
They say it makes you laugh. I want to laugh.
I hear magic mushrooms make you very happy. Then Little Angel said, I saw what you did. Coming so soon after confession, it hit Big Angel with a cold rip of panic all down his back.
What did I do?
He blurted. In the shed.
What?
Ookie.
Oh.
Big Angel lay back. I did a lot of things, he confessed, and let a slow leak of relief breath whistle out.
Yes, Ookie City. That was good.
Little Angel moved up and lay next to his brother. Together, they stared at the ceiling.
I can't believe you did that, Little Angel said.
My little secret.
People will find out.
I know.
When I'm gone, that's a good thing. They'll see what Pops did.
Now his right hand was trembling. He tucked it under too.
Mother, he thought. maybe I am tired after all. Big Angel was aware of the sad steps of the dance. It cost him great effort to speak now. When you died in small doses. You had trouble speaking. You forgot who was beside you. You were suddenly furious and in a panic of outrage. You wished you could be saintly. You wished you weren't so weak. You suddenly felt better and fooled yourself into believing that a miracle was about to happen. Well, wasn't that all a dirty, rotten thing to pull on somebody? He produced a smartphone and struggled to control his hands to tap on it. "What are you doing?" Little Angel said.
"Texting Minnie." The phone pinged. "She's coming."
In a minute, Minnie hurried into the room. "You rang?"
"In the closet," Big Angel said.
Minnie squeezed past the bed and said, "The Chud is back. He's outside."
"He's wasted. I'm so pissed."
"Qué?" Big Angel said.
"Nothing, Daddy. Just talking to my tío."
She turned back to Little Angel.
"Lalo, I told him to stay clean. He doesn't listen."
"Lalo," said Big Angel, "is he using again?"
"It's okay," she said. "I got this."
Big Angel kicked his feet.
"Really, Daddy? Lalo's just having a tough day.
Everybody is."
"I'm sorry."
"No, no, no. It's my fault."
"Stop it, Daddy. No such thing."
"Carnal," said Little Angel, but he didn't have anything else to say, so he left it hanging. Minnie rattled around in the closet and came out with a small flat plastic storage box with a snap-on lid. She laid it beside Big Angel's feet. She went back into the shadow and came out with a heavy brown wool overcoat. It had brass buttons and looked floor length. She nodded at Big Angel and smiled, and she squeezed Little Angel's shoulder as she slipped past him. "Have fun, you two," she said, and went back to managing the fiesta.
"This is our father's police overcoat," Big Angel said. "I give it to you."
Little Angel just stared at it.
"You can touch it," Big Angel said.
Little Angel reached over and took up the coat. It was heavy. It smelled faintly of mothballs. He studied the buttons. They were tarnished, but the eagle battling a snake on a cactus was clearly visible. He stood up, held the coat to his chest, and looked down at himself. His shoulders were wider than his father's had been, and the long coat reached only 2 inches above his knees.
"I thought he was a giant."
Big Angel wheezed slightly. "So did I."
"He was tiny,"
Little Angel said.
"My size," Big Angel said.
"Sorry. I used to think I was so big. I thought I was a big man."
"So did I."
The line fell flat and hard.
"What is that supposed to mean?"
Big Angel said.
Little Angel shook his head.
"Nothing." It wasn't what he had meant to say. Their entire life as a family had relied on play acting, he suddenly realized. He dropped the coat back onto the bed. It sounded harsher than I meant for it to sound. "No harm, no foul, right?"
"I have disappointed you."
Little Angel turned away. "Come on, man," he said.
"Let's not. I must have failed you, is that right?"
"Jesus, man. Tell me now."
"Knock it off.
Go on.
You have a complaint?
Last chance, pinche Gabriel."
"You fucker.
Stop waving your death in everybody's face."
"Death?"
Big Angel thought. "Really? What do you know about death?"
"Nice," he said.
"Look."
"Don't say look to me, mister."
Little Angel walked out of the room. "What do you think you are, my mother?" He walked to the kitchen and hugged La Gloriosa, who was startled. Little Angel returned to the room and sat on the end of the bed.
"Look," he said.
Big Angel raised his hand. "I know," he said. "I was not a perfect brother to you." He put up his other hand.
"Don't say it. I don't want to hear it. You did the best you could. That's talk for losers."
"Hey now, tone down the harshness there, Angel." They didn't look at each other. "Maybe I wasn't a perfect brother either," Little Angel gallantly announced.
Big Angel laughed. "Maybe?"
Shut up. Little Angel was furious, and he didn't know why. Big Angel laughed again. Cruelly, Little Angel thought. Who cares?